Welcome, everyone.
Welcome, and thank you very much for coming tonight. I'm David Scorton. I'm the president of Cornell University, and it's a great pleasure to be here with all of you tonight. And on behalf of Cornell, before we do anything else, we want to give our heartfelt thanks to Judith Jamison for so generously welcoming us again to the Joan Lyles Center for Dance. It's been so wonderful over the years to be able to take advantage of your hospitality and to celebrate you with all the wonderful things that you've done. I deeply regret that our other partner tonight, Joan Wild, because of illness, is not able to be with us. She's going to be fine. She's just not able to join us tonight. And she sends her best, and she's relaxing and convalescing while we're enjoying each other. Joan, as you know, is the chair of the Alvin Ailey Dance Foundation, a remarkable cultural and philanthropic leader, not only for this wonderful entity that we are in now and the people who make it happen, but throughout New York. She is very generous, as is Sandy Weil, her husband. And as you know, without me telling you, but I'll tell you anyway, they have transformed much of the cultural life of New York City in a wonderful partnership that they've had together. To be politically correct, I want to recognize many of my bosses who are here, trustees of Cornell University. If you raise your hands, then later I can say that I recognize you. Raise your hands. These are trustees. These are three of my bosses. And we'll try to make sure during the Q&A that we call on you first.
I'll be right back.
Perfect. Now, tonight, even though Joan was not able to be with us, we do have greetings from the Wild family. And another one of my bosses, Trustee Jessica Bibliowitz, who is a very accomplished business person in her own right, and a Cornell trustee, and a Cornell parent, is going to say a few words on behalf of the Weil family. Jessica, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Also give the reassurance that my mom is going to be fine. She has very bad allergies. She can't talk, and she's really sorry not to be here with all of you tonight because she was really looking forward to it. But what I wanted to try and do, and I'm doing this on quite short notice, is all of 10 minutes. But thank you, Mr. President. I am clearly not getting this boss thing right. But anyway, we're going to work on it. But what I really wanted to do just for a couple of minutes is kind of share some of the things that have gone on with my mom and Alvin Ailey. And in my family, and I'm sure like many of yours, if it's important to one of us, it's important to all of us. And to my mother, there's nothing really more special than Alvin Ailey. She went on the board in 94. She actually did the first gala that she ran, I think was in 1996. And for those of you that have been to the gala, I think you know that it is really the night in New York. It is so exceptional, and we all look forward to it every year. And I hope to see all of you there next year buying tables and supporting this great organization, because it's just an incredibly, incredibly special night. And I know you'll love it, and you'll love it when you see the dancers and what can happen with Alvin Ailey. In 2000, or 2001, somewhere in there, she actually became chairman of Alvin Ailey. And one of the really nice things for me to see was how much she contributed to the organization, but also seeing her grow as a chairperson of an organization and really kind of built her confidence and allowed her to really express her creativity. So that, I think, has been a very, very nice experience. And then, of course, she was very much behind this building that we're all in today, which I happen to think, for very biased reasons, is the greatest building in all of Manhattan. You might know that my husband's the architect with his partner, so I have a reason to say that. But I think you all agree, right? And if Ken Kleiman agrees, it's done, it's set. So all of this is incredibly special. And David did a very nice job talking about the fact that Cornell is really, really important to me. And I am a graduate of Cornell. I made it through somehow, although watching my son, I wouldn't make it through today, certainly not in architecture. My son is in his third year. My husband went to Cornell. I do get to serve on the Board of Trustees, which is an incredible honor. So what's really nice is that to see these two great things that are part of my family maybe begin to become more of a family together and to do some really interesting things and just to share this back and forth, I think, is special. So if any of you walk out of here not addicted, hopefully you're already addicted to Cornell, but not addicted to Alvin Ailey too, I will be shocked. So this is going to be the kind of day that changes your world. It's going to rock your world. And the woman that I think has rocked my mother's world and all of our worlds, who is floating around here somewhere, I know, is, she knows who rocks the world, is Judith Jamison. So she has just been incredible, inspirational, special, beautiful, talented, and amazing. So I think this is going to really be a great forum for everybody, and I wish you all a great evening. Get addicted. This is the place to be. So thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jessica, thank you very, very much for pitching in. Jessica mentioned that we only gave her 10 minutes, which is the exact amount of time my board gives me to prepare reports. So just getting even, those of you who work with boards. And Jessica reminded me that we have a very distinguished dean of the number one ranked architecture program in the United States and Cornell University's College of Architecture, Art, and Planning, Ken Kleiman. So way more interesting and better half is Pincus, please be recognized. So let me share a few thoughts, and then Judith and I are going to share a few thoughts together. We're going to ask you to join in the conversation, so we can have one big conversation, and then we have some more wonderful excitement coming up tonight. We're very, very honored tonight, I am, I know you are, to have this opportunity for conversation with one of the leading figures in the world of the arts, and specifically in the world of dance. Ms. Judith Jamison is, as you know, artistic director of the legendary, iconic Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Since its landmark debut at the 92nd Street Y in 1958, Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater has been a tremendous force in American dance. Since then, the company has performed in 48 states. Got to figure out which states have missed out on this. 71 other countries, and has become a heralded ambassador of American culture, sharing the rich experience of African American dance with people everywhere. I want to confess something that I haven't told anyone in 5 years. My inaugural speech, such as it was, becoming president of Cornell University, was built on the metaphor of dance. The whole thing was built around the name of the speech was dance. And a part of the inspiration of it was early work that you did that I watched from afar. So it's a chance to thank you in an audience where I won't be embarrassed to tell you that. That speech, by the way, is available for your reading. And if there's some night that you, if there's some night that you can't sleep, rather than take a chemical that'll leave you with a funny taste in your mouth, this will put you to sleep easy. Anyway, the Ailey organization also encompasses, as many of you know, the Ailey School, Ailey 2 for young dancers and emerging choreographers and educational community programs. Judith Jamison danced with the Alvin Ailey Company for a decade and a half, and Ailey created some of his most memorable roles for her. Not long before his passing in 1989, Mr. Ailey chose her to succeed him as artistic director, a beautiful, beautiful example of the passing of the baton. In more than two decades at the head of this company, leading it literally and figuratively, Ms. Jamison has created such acclaimed works as Riverside, Here Now with original music by Wynton Marsalis, Love Stories in collaboration with Rennie Harris and Robert Battle, Reminiscent and Him, which became an Emmy Award winning television special. Very moving, and I know that many of you enjoyed that. She helped develop the Women's Choreography Initiative, as well as a Bachelor of Fine Arts, BFA program of the Ailey School and Fordham University. She led the company on a 50-city tour in celebration of its 50th anniversary in the 08-09 season. And she has received innumerable awards and honors, including the National Medal of Arts, a Bessie Award for Lifetime Commitment to the Preservation and Development of Dance and the Arts, and the Kennedy Center Honors. As Judith Jamison approaches, I'm not going to say retirement, I'm going to say the next phase, We know that she'll be missed in a way, but we're also delighted to have us today with us. Her very dynamic successor, Robert Battle, has long been associated with the Ailey organization as a choreographer and artist in residence, and he'll become the new artistic director on the 1st of July. You'll be hearing from him a little bit later, but Robert, in the meantime, would you please stand so we can recognize you? Another passing of the baton. So I'm very honored to have this opportunity for a discussion with you tonight. Ms. Jamison is a leading figure in the arts and humanities, and I want to take just a moment to tell you that I believe our country, in a time of austerity and a time of budget cutting, is at risk of walking away from public funding of the arts and humanities. And forgive me for a very brief political message, but since the mid-90s, the last time we faced such an occasion, right after another midterm election, we have noticed a steady erosion of the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities that are now about 40% below where they were 15 years ago in inflation-adjusted dollars, while all other federal research agencies are up, some having doubled. As I've said on multiple occasions publicly, in writing and orally, as a physician and a biomedical researcher, of course, I believe in the power of science and technology, but the most significant problems in our world and the things that we need to learn most as people will not be solved by science, or at least not by science alone. And in this interconnected world, culture is the thing that will connect people of varying backgrounds. And we're very committed at Cornell to doing our part. And I hope, if and when you have the occasion, that you will support some advocacy as you see fit to remember the importance of public funding of culture, the arts, and humanities in our country. Thanks for listening so patiently. I appreciate that. So let's start with some questions about leadership and vision. You've been involved with the Ailey Company since 1965, I believe. First as a performer and Mr. Ailey's muse, if I may say, and for the last 22 years as artistic director. Could you please share some of the highlights of your work with Alvin Ailey and leading the company that have been most meaningful to you?
Well, we're sitting in one of the highlights right now. And I must thank my board for naming a studio after me just recently. This half is mine. And this half is who?
Morgan Stanley.
Thank you. So
I like your half better.
That's kind of a crowning achievement, if I don't say so myself, because of being able to sit in the pilot's seat and be equipped to fly the plane, because I have an incredible group of dancers that I can't claim are mine. We always call them the Ailey dancers, all 30 of them, that Mr. Battle will be able to take over in a matter of weeks and take the pilot position and fly this plane even higher. But that certainly is a crowning achievement of this part of my life, but also dance-wise, it was something that you probably remember, and it is that classic piece called Revelations, which is 50 years old this year. If you could imagine Mr. Ailey coming from this tiny town in Texas and having the wherewithal to get to California because of his mother, and study romance languages in college, but also be introduced to dance by the great Carmen de Lavallade when he was like 12 or 14 or something like that, and have his world flipped around and plant this seed eventually that turned into the magnificent building that we're living in. Revelations, if you haven't seen it, have any of you seen it? You got to get to the theater and see that, and then you'll understand why people and our audiences and people just walking down the street here that look in this building radiate toward this organization. And part of that is the relationship that we all had with Mr. Ailey, and that hopefully has continued through Mazuzumi Chaya, who's the Associate Artistic Director, Sharon Luckman, who's our Executive Director sitting over here, Bennett Rink, who's the, Senior Director of External Affairs. Oh, well, that's different. Because I used to call it development, right? But now it's something else. But the expansion of this is an expansion of this man's heart and his spirit and his sensitivity and his genius as a choreographer, but also as a humanitarian, as a visionary, you know, and that I was able to walk in that path with him is the great pleasure. That is the great height of things for me, because there's revelations. There's also a piece called Cry, which some of you might have seen, a tour de force of 15 minutes that I danced, and then it's still being done. It was created in 1971. We're still doing it, you know? So it's about carrying on this tradition, about understanding past, present, and future. The most important part of passing this on to Mr. Battle is I saw and continue to see a future. That is the most important thing, that dancers have a place to live and function healthily with horizons in front of them that they have a chance to reach, that students can do the same thing. You know, that Denise Jefferson, who was our former director of our school, who passed away last year, saw that BFA program in her head and made that happen with Fordham University. So we are so proud to be major modern dance company, ambassadors to the world, affiliated with a great university, you know, and have our students graduate from there and then spread the word of excellence, not just Ailey, but excellence, you know. So these are part of the parts of my life that excite me, can you tell? That really make me filled with knowing that we're doing the right thing, that we are staying in touch with the communities that we serve. So that means that when I was dancing in on stages that were this big or stages that were opera houses. We were bringing dance to the communities that we served. We were always reaching out before outreach became a buzzword. We were always doing that. So all of these, the things that I mentioned now are part of the highlights of my life, because they have to do with staying in touch with our audiences and recognizing them as sitting in the audience, but participants. And our funders, they're participants. I mean, the reason that Ellie Applewhite is sitting over here, and she's been on the board for 40 years?
72.
A long, long time. But it's about participation and love of Ailey, because she knew Mr. Ailey. But it's love of being a participant, not just getting money, you know, not just bringing money. And when you mentioned Joan, she fell in love. She fell in love with the company. You know, she fell in love with the idea that we could communicate on such a wonderful level, that it wasn't just about performance, but it was about heart and soul and spirit. And it's something that I like to call spiritual reciprocity. I'm wearing that out now. But it says to me that we're in this wonderful circle of enjoying each other's existence. And we're part of turning on that light bulb in you that says past, present, and there is a future.
This is so wonderful. You're getting me crazy, because the staff has put together these carefully concocted
questions. I just answered a few.
I'm going to throw them out. No. I mean, you're bringing up so many better ideas. Yeah, so with all deference to the staff, I mean, let's just forget this.
Well.
So just a couple things. I aspire to be a leader. That's what I aspire to be. And you're a leader. You're so obviously a leader. You have the vision. Just allow me anyway.
Okay, I'm bearing with you.
You can't stand us. You have the vision. You have the passion. And you have the ability to share that passion with other people. And by the way, in passing, that gig of external affairs is so much better than development. Because if you say development, your title, people, they won't even answer the phone. If you say external affairs, you never know. Anyway, you've obviously connected. Connection is the thing that makes it happen. And so help me understand a little bit about I wouldn't insult you by asking what your philosophy of leadership is, because real leaders don't develop a philosophy of leadership, they just lead. But how is it that you have done those leadership functions, in addition to the passion, in addition to enjoying and sharing the art and the participants, you've also led and organized and executed. Right. Tell us a little bit about how you've done that so well.
Piece of cake. Get people around you that are talented, that are full of love for what they do, and that includes staff, dancers, crew, everybody. Get them around there. And if they can do it better than you, let them do it. Let them do, give them full rein to do what they do best. So it's always, you know, I surround myself with people that do things a lot better than I do. I'm good at some things, but there are other functions that people do that I couldn't possibly think of doing. And they're there to fill in those holes in my brain that don't quite work. But I've always had a sense of knowing who is excellent, you know, and not just dancers. But I've always had the idea that there's nothing like delegating, nothing like it at all. But with those people that you know are sitting, you know, in the same plane you're sitting in, you know?
I'm totally with you. In fact, at the risk of embarrassing a couple of my colleagues, Kent Kleinman and Mary Opperman, the VP for Human Resources for Cornell University, these are people who are way more talented and creative than I am. And so it is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. Delegation with a smile on your mm-hmm. face, with a relaxation of knowing that it's going to be done, in my case, better than I could have done mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And then if I play my cards right, I'll get the credit for it anyway. But that's a whole, that's another conversation. That's a different conversation. So if it's okay, I'd like to ask you this question having to do with the role of arts and culture in our world right now. It may sound funny coming from me, but all we're hearing about is jobs, jobs, jobs. Get the economy turned around, and so on, which is unbelievably important to do, because a few minutes from here there are plenty of people, and many, many people 20 minutes from my office in Ithaca, who don't have enough to eat, who don't have shelter, who don't know what the future will bring. So it's obvious that we have to do our parts, all of us, for the economy, but the heart and soul of our country is its culture, and I believe, with the privileges I have to travel all over the world on behalf of Cornell, that probably our most important export, and has been for generations, is some of the culture that was actually created here.
Oh, absolutely.
And you are an exponent of a very, very substantial part of that. Tell me a little bit about your feeling about the role of culture in this world, in this country, in our interactions with the world in general, and how we can get that message across.
Well, we're about to get it across again in our 53rd year of existence. We tour more than any other company in the United States. And Robert is about to go on tour with the company in I don't know how many cities we're going to, but we're going, for instance, back to Russia for the fourth mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. We're going to Oslo. We're going to Germany back there again. We do these repeat engagements around the world, as I said, for the last 53 years. Sometimes we're the only thing between the United States and what people understand about the United States. We're the only thing representing you, mm-hmm. you know? So that's where that excellence comes into being. But of course, when we say our culture, fortunately, we've got a repertory in Alvin Ailey that's, we're over about 250 ballets in the repertory, so it's not a one-note song. Mm-hmm. So when we take the works over there, and we take our diversity over there, because we are certainly famous for, as I say, not being a one-note song, people understand more about our country through what we're doing in our performance than I could actually tell them. And what I could actually speak about what it is to be an American with the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. So I think it's terribly important, seeing as how we have television that's sending another message necessarily about what the United States is. I mean, if you think of all the reality shows that are on television that are hitting international television, and you think of what our images are looking like based on some of those shows, then we got a way to go, right? So my point is that we carry our banner high for our country, but we also do it within our country. And that's where I come back to the communities that we serve. You know that when we play different cities in the United States, sometimes, like in Atlanta, we'll see 4,000 children in a morning.
Wow.
Who maybe haven't had a good meal, or maybe are coming from a home where both parents don't work. But for that one moment of suspended time, they are magically transported by an hour performance of dancers who they can recognize, who they can associate with, they can see what their culture is about. And they're uplifted, even if it's for that moment, with an indelible impression of what is possible.
And that possibility, the potential of the future, the optimism,
yes,
to know perhaps that somewhere in the heart of one of those children, mm-hmm, you have started a spark.
Absolutely.
That will smolder and become a flame, and that will be another Judith Jamison.
And then Robert always tells a wonderful story about how he started. I'm sure Robert will tell you about it, you know? So I don't even want to go there, but his beginnings were sparked by performance, so.
You know, I wanted to make some mention about Joan and Sandy Weill, because I'm disappointed that she's not with us, and everything you said resonated with me, but something you said resonated with something they had done. About 12 years ago, Sandy Weill, in the consultation with Joan, as he does everything, had this idea of starting a medical school in the country of Qatar, in the Persian Gulf. And there is no medical school in the country, and no American medical school before or since has given an MD overseas. And they decided to do that, and I just had the honor of officiating at the fourth commencement there. 31 young people from 16 countries, and that is just another expression of the same thing that you're talking about, I think in three ways. One is doing something that affects the young people of the world, which is all of our futures. Number two is showing that part of American culture, I shouldn't say that part, another part of American culture that we ought to be proud of. And the third is, I don't know if you all have had a chance to ever read anything by a man named Joseph Nye, N-Y-E, anybody? He's an assistant or associate deputy, undersecretary, whatever those terms are, of defense some years ago, who popularized the term soft power, saying that if you want to influence the world, and you're not talking about influence, you're talking about inspiring, mm-hmm, but even if you want to influence the world, that diplomacy, that's government to government. But there's another approach besides economic power and military power, and that is the power of attraction into something people want. Mm-hmm. And I think people want to believe in the optimistic creation of art and in the many, many messages that are sent that you maybe can't possibly express in words or in writing, mm-hmm, that are expressed so beautifully and eloquently in dance. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you are an example of all of those three things. And I congratulate you for that, and in absentia, congratulate the Wiles for doing their part in another way to affect young people in the world. But I want to take a minute and applaud you for doing that. It's wonderful. Oh. If we had more Judith Jamisons representing us around the world and fewer of those individuals who you all elected, I'm just going to say that, I think we'd be better off. I know you all vote. I know you elected them. Please don't blame me. I've been too busy to do that. So another question I'd like to ask, and that is your ideas and the inspiration for your ideas. Must be multiple sources, must be many sources. Are there any special sources of inspiration that you would be willing to share with us?
For what in particular?
For anything.
For dance, for life?
Anything you'd like to share with us. It could be for getting up every morning. It could be for dance. It could be for anything that gets your motor going.
Well, the older I get, just getting up is wonderful. That's, you know, opening my eyes and breathing and saying, thank God, you know, I'm still here. What, you know, young people inspire me. They just do. I love being around young people, period. I love being around committed people. I love being around people that have a real joie de vivre. They have a real love of enjoying that they got two arms, two legs, a heart, they're functioning. you know, and doing more than functioning, yes. But they understand the beauty of their lives and how valuable the time is that you have in living in it. As a dancer, I think probably as a kid, I must have come out of the womb just enjoying the fact that I could do what I could do. And wasn't that wonderful? And for instance, people ask me about my height. When I was a kid, I was like the tallest kid in the,
yes.
And I thought everybody else was short. So I was enjoying the fact that I was that lanky, tall, you know, kind of awkward kid that had the longest legs, but wasn't that wonderful? So I've always had this energy, and I still have that energy of my youth, but I love to be surrounded by it. I mean, that's what's so glorious about the Ailey Dancers and about this organization. It's not that everybody is young in age, but we certainly are. I won't even call it young at heart, because otherwise I'll break out in a tomb. But it's more like this wonderful knowing energy that this is valuable time that we are spending now, and we can do things for others, and we can do it through the things that we do excellently. So that makes me feel good.
I wrote it down. It's
but it makes me feel good. Not all the time now. I don't stay like bubbles, you know. I'm not like this all the time. But it gets, when I have to reflect and think back on it, then it puts me into gear.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, and I know why I'm here.
I'm hoping that people who work with me don't comment on how little of the time I'm bubbles, but we just have to talk about that right now. By the way, as an aside, where in Russia is the company going?
Where are we going? Moscow and St. Petersburg. Right?
My dad was born in Western Russia, but nobody ever visits that little tiny village.
What was it called?
It's in Belarus now. It's called Babruysk.
Well, you'd be surprised where we've been in Russia. We were in Russia. We were the Modern Dance Company, went to Russia when nobody else was going in 1970. We did Lugansk, Boryshilyograd, Donetsk, Moscow, Kiev, and Leningrad.
Wow.
You know, and that was in 6 weeks.
See, now this is, as an aside, I don't mean to be gushing so much, but I'm really thrilled to be here with you. But I must say, at a time where we were circling each other as countries and mm-hmm. not seeing eye to eye and not trusting each other, you were connecting directly with the people. Now, I want to bring up an issue about funding. This is my last question I'm going to bother you with before I let our friends.
And I hope I can answer it, because there's Sharon Luckman right over there, my executive director, if I can't answer it.
No, you. with all due respect, I know you're going to answer this one great. Well, you've been doing it and everything else. So the sources of funding for culture in our country, there is still some public money going to it, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. And I hope there'll be more because of efforts that we're all working on. There are foundations, nonprofit offshoots of government, that in some cases are funding more than government, and then there's individual philanthropy. So the question about individual philanthropy I have, and this is one I ponder sometimes in my own fundraising activities, in a world where there are so many needs, so many things that tug at the heartstrings, and tug at the spirit, and tug at the mind, and so many places that people could contribute in a volunteer capacity, in a monetary capacity. What is an approach that you use, I'm trying to learn from you, to interest people in sharing some of their talent as volunteers, some of their monetary contributions with Ailey, when there's so many competing things in the world?
Well, one thing that is not in competition is the clear vision of the company. Mm-hmm. The clear vision. If you go, and y'all got to get to the theater if you haven't seen the company, a former executive director of ours who used to say something about products. He used to call us a product. And so I was like, oh, geez, people call us a product. Well, guess what? We are a product, you know, in the highest sense of the word. But we are. And if you got a great product, there are people that are going to follow it. But with the product, to me, what has to happen is the heart and soul of what the product is about.
Yeah.
And if you don't have an about, I don't care how excellent the product is, If people don't make a deep connection to it on a level that they understand, that they can connect to it, then it's worthless. But if you have excellence in for the Ailey Company in performance. They're gorgeous to look at. They're at the top of their forms when they're dancing. There is variety, there is diversity. There is love and passion on the stage that is palpable when you see a performance. There is integrity, and there is great love of what we do. And you stir all that up in a pot, and somebody comes to a performance, or they go downstairs and see the Afro-Cuban class that's going on down. When you came in, there was a class being taught by the daughter-in-law of artists, great artists. Do you know who it is? Yes, you do, and I'll think of who she is in a minute. But when you get that kind of connection and you get people that are coming off the street standing out here on the street looking in the windows and you say, I say, go on in and take a class. And you start out with a program that has 500 people registered to take it, of people that don't dance, right? And they've heard Ailey, so they know the product. They've heard Ailey.
Yes.
They haven't seen it, but with the internet, of course, everybody can see everything. And then all of a sudden, they're inside, and from those 500 people from 5 years ago that were registering to take class that didn't know how to dance, there are now 42,000 people registered to do this coming through the school, because all of a sudden, they didn't just turn on a light bulb and go like, oh, wow, let me go in here because it's the Alvin Ailey building or the Joan Wall Center for Dance or anything. But they felt and they saw something that was absolutely tangible to them. And they felt secure when they walked through these doors that no one was there to do anything but share light with them, you know, and share knowledge with them. And for them to have fun and come in and enjoy themselves. So with that kind of attraction on the grassroots, the people, you know, it works its way up and gets to funders, it gets to anybody that wants to be engaged in something that is nothing but positive, nothing but positive.
Well, you're a magic hypnotic person.
But it's true,
fabulous,
right?
But anyway, you still are anyhow. So, you know, I want to tell you a little tiny example where I've run into that myself, since being at Cornell. I was always in public higher education at UCLA, University of Iowa, and then I've been 5 years at Cornell. It's a private school, and you think it's an Ivy League school. It's one of these kind of places. But it's the only private university in the United States that is a so-called land-grant institution. In the 1860s, they passed this law, and every state was given land. And they could sell the land, take the proceeds, and start a university or a college if the college would do the mechanical arts, engineering, or agriculture, something that was practical. So Cornell is the land-grant university for New York, and we're in all 57 upstate counties and all five boroughs helping people, but that's a mantra. Mm-hmm. And I ran into a situation the other day that stimulated volunteerism in someone, I think for the exact or similar reason. Mm-hmm. The gentleman who started the restaurant Blue Moon, mm-hmm. Dan Barber, also has a restaurant up in Westchester called Stone Barns. And it's attached to a nonprofit, food-oriented agriculture teaching training deal. And he invited me up there to have dinner as his guest. And I thought, wow, last time some world-famous chef asked me to do that was never, ever. And I said, is it my old speeches that got you to bring me here? And he said, well, not really. And I said, it must be my speaking style. And he said, well, no, not really. And I said, what was it? So when they set up that nonprofit farm up there, an extension agent from Cornell Cooperative Extension, I don't know if I ever told you this story, Mary or Kent, an extension agent just helped him get connected. He began to meet people in the extension service who were there because they were supposed to be there, state support down, state support up. They wanted to help him do things the right way. Talk about what you might do with interesting vegetables and other kinds of harvest. Mm-hmm. And he became close heart to heart and mind to mind with these people. Mm-hmm. And he just recently came to the campus in Ithaca and talked to our students of all things in an entrepreneurship mm-hmm. program. Mm-hmm. how did he get the idea to start this? How did he start the restaurant? And so on and so forth. I think it was the same thing that you're talking about. It's wonderful that you're having this conversation. We have time for many of you to ask some questions. We have about 18.5 minutes, according to my... there's some people doing these first base coach kind of signs out here. When they go like this, you'll know we're done. But please, don't be bashful. If you have questions, we have folks with microphones who could bring them to you so that we can record them. Please, this gentleman right here. And hang on, just wait long enough for us to get the microphone to you so we can record it. And if you're comfortable, tell us who you are.
And if you're not, don't.
Okay, if you're not, make a name up. That's.
I'm Bill Burley, class of 45, one of the senior members here.
Is it on?
No.
Hold on, John is working on that. Maybe there's a little switch on there. Did you say 45?
Class of 45, yes. I was wondering if a young dancer comes to the company and auditions, and she's probably in her late teens or early 20s, and you think that she has possibilities. What happens then? Do you support her in any way? Do you teach her? Is there any kind of pay that she gets while she's training? What kind of an investment, if any, do you make in the dancer if she feels she has the talent that you feel that would be good for the company? So I'm just curious, how would she support herself, or he support himself while trying to make it in the Alvin Ailey Dance Company?
Well, once a year we have auditions for the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Once a year. That's it. People come from all over the world to audition. But in the school, you know, when they're teenagers, their parents are bringing them, you know, and then they get scholarships in the summer, and then Sharon can fill you in about our programs that we're working on with the scholarships. But it's difficult. It's very difficult for them to support themselves. However, there's Ailey 2 that they can go to. And Ailey 2 is a two-year program. They're 18 to 22 years old. They're paid, very little, but they're paid. They can live. And then from there, they can audition for Ailey, and then you just make so much money when you're an Ailey dancer.
Not.
It's very, very difficult for a dancer to train and study and become any kind of dancer, let alone an Ailey dancer. There are scholarships that we give. Parents are really very active in trying to support their children's, you know, lives as far as studying is concerned. But, and there are also wonderful programs, like we just had a dancer get an Annenberg, remember, in the company? There's an Annenberg scholarship that you can get. And there's another, Princess Grace, right? There are all kinds of programs that can support them. Not very many, but I think Sharon can fill you in on more of the programs. But it's tough. It's just plain old tough. And I don't believe you graduated 2 years after I was born. Oh my gosh.
Are you shocked that he's such a youngster? Is that what you're saying?
Wow.
Because I got to tell you something. Tomorrow night, when I get back to Ithaca, we will be starting our so-called reunion weekend.
Wow.
And I want you to know the first class I'm going to meet with is the class of 31.
Whoa.
The 80th, first time Cornell's going to celebrate an 80th reunion.
Wow.
Yeah. Now think about the math for a second, folks. 80 years, and say they were 21 when they graduated. And I'll tell you right now that these people, I'm going to walk in there and they're going to say, you look tired. They're going to say to me, you look tired. And when the party's over, I'm going to say, I have to go now. And they say, we are just getting going. And I'm telling you, that's going to happen. Class of 31. So you got a ways to go before we consider you a mature reveler.
And also, great. I have to tell you, there's a young man in the company now who's now the rehearsal director. I just made him the rehearsal director just as that. He's also a guest artist with the company. His name is Matthew Rushing. He's been with the company for 19 years dancing. He's an extraordinary dancer. When he auditioned, he was maybe 16 or 15 when he auditioned in California. And he had a T-shirt that he had made that said Alvin Ailey on it. So he already knew what he wanted to do. And he fulfilled that. He went through the school, he came on scholarship, they stayed with people's parents, they do all kinds of housing things, they work things out, you know? And then he got in second company, and then I hired him for the first company. Here he is now, rehearsal director, guest artist, extraordinary dancer. He went the journey, but he already knew he wanted to be an Ailey dancer. There are a lot of people in here that don't, you know, they're just here dancing. And we take them as young as two, you know? So there are a lot of people in here that are just having a good time. And some of them are seriously studying, and some of them are excellent that aren't seriously studying. But the idea is that you come in to fulfill what you need in your life, to fill that light in your life that you need to fill as a growing artist, just as a kid, having fun, or whatever your agenda is, but that you enjoy it in this space.
Thank you. Please.
Hi, Debbie Adelman, and just some class, whatever. whatever. Dance, I guess I'd say after our children, because it wouldn't be good to put it before them. Dance might be one of the most important things in Charlie and our lives. This is the third of the fourth night this week where we're attending something that's dance related. It really, we can't dance particularly well, but we figure we can enjoy it and support it. And the Ailey Company is wonderful. And as I said to Judith before, we had the great honor of actually seeing her dance to Revelations. And if you haven't seen the Ailey Company, you really should. You mentioned and you talked a bit about the school and bringing young people in and getting dance, you know, young people engaged in dance. There's a lot of companies that we see, and one of the things, and I just wondered you might want to comment on, a dancer's dancing career is fairly short as a dancer, I guess like athletes and others. Does the company also work with the dancers on what happens next? I mean, you're a wonderful transition. The transition of what happens to be a choreographer, to be a director, and whatever. But there's only so many of those kinds of positions. Do you work with your dancers with like what's next when you can't be an active dancer?
How long you dance is up to you. You know, it really is. We've got a dancer in the company named Renee Robinson. She's the longest standing woman in the company. This is her 30th year. She's dancing with the company. And if somebody comes in and is 16 or 20 years old dancing next to her, you can't tell the difference. She's an amazing artist. She's amazing. But yes, as hard as it is for my generation, it's my generation, Robert's generation maybe not, but it's hard for my generation to go to understand that during my piloting of the plane, there's such a thing developed called the Dancers Resource Fund. And I was squeaking behind that. I was like, I don't know, you're thinking about retiring, you just started dancing, you know? But it was very important for dancers, particularly they understand their bodies now. My generation, we just went like blah, you know? And these dancers understand every muscle in the body. They understand exactly what their bodies are doing. And they're smart, and they think ahead. I thought I was gonna dance forever. You know, in the 60s and the 70s and all that. And they think ahead. Okay, this dance life isn't going to be that long, so what am I going to do next? So they created something called the Dancers Resource Funds. This helps them in transition. There's also another organization, what's it called?
Career Transitions
for dancers, yeah. Go, Sharon.
No, so that's
microphone,
dancers,
microphone.
Broadway dancers, microphone. Broadway dancers, modern dancers, all ballet dancers. There is a nonprofit organization that helps, so that's their role.
But that's a toughie because, as I said, my mentality is different than that, but I understand where they're going because they're just trying to protect those futures. And I've got dancers, there are dancers in the company that have turned into everything from lawyers to, there's a wonderful woman that was here yesterday, her name is Reverend Dr. Ebony Marshall Terman, who was in our initial BFA program at Fordham. She's now one of the head pastors up at Abyssinian Baptist Church. I mean, dancers can turn into anything they need to turn into because they're multi-talented and multi-dimensional as you are. Yes.
Somebody was just...
Oh, I'm saying yes, and I'm not moderating, excuse me.
So, Lisa first, and then Cheryl, just a minute, please. Reintroduce yourself, if you would.
No, you're not on.
Lisa Pincus. I have the honor of teaching art history at Cornell University. And as such, I am very involved in the fine arts, painting, prints, so on. And when President Skorton is talking about arts and arts funding, arts as ambassadors, within culture and between cultures, I'm particularly interested in whether you can talk to us a little bit about what it is to be a dancer, to use your body as, I hate to say instrument, because it just sounds...
That's what it is. That's exactly what
but
it is.
What does it mean, and how does it communicate to others that you're using your body, and also you use music, or not? Can you talk a little bit about that general...
Well, I'll tell you one thing, it hurts. It hurts, it really does. I mean, we do extreme things with our bodies, extreme things. And that's why it's so important that we take care of them, because we understand that this is the temple here. This is it, this is all you get. And we understand that we are caretakers of spirit, that you really have to understand that there's a glow in here and it's gotta get on the outside through your movement, the way you move. And that you have a trust. And you really have to take care of that trust, because you are transporting what it is to be human to someone without words necessarily. And they have to understand or not understand. I always like to tell people that there's no test at the end of a performance. There's no exam. You get what you get out of it. You come to the theater and it is your joy, it is your experience, you know, and we happen to be up there trying to continue that experience and turn something on in you. So our responsibility is honesty. Our responsibility is truth. Our responsibility is from the depths of our gut, from our soul, to give you a reflection of yourself. That's what we're responsible for. And it could be, you know, somebody standing on stage scratching, you know? I mean, people do everything now, you know, besides doing wonderful arabesques and jetés and pirouettes and things that you can recognize. But there are all kinds of ways of moving. And God knows we've been moving since the beginning of time. We had purpose for rain and for crops and for babies and for not just decoration. But the true dancer to me is still dancing about that rain, those crops, those babies, but it's on another level. And when they touch you in your gut, that's when we're doing our work. That's it's fine. Like looking at a painting, right? If you see an exquisite piece that touches you and you have an individual experience with that, it's you having that experience with that. That's a wonderful thing. It's wonderful. That's what art is supposed to do. Can I get a witness? All right.
What
right.
A fabulous, fabulous right. Explanation. Fantastic.
It's true, though.
By the way, if this scratching thing is for real, I'm ready to audition, because I got all kinds of itches and everything. One of my bosses, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Cheryl Tucker, class of 78. And I want to thank you for being such a dance scholar and not only entertaining me for many years, but also helping me understand what dance is about in many, many, many dimensions. You talked about, as you pass the reins, the future. I'd just like to know, what do you see in the future for the dance company? And what, if any, are you out there fundraising for?
Well, let's put it this way. I'll always be fundraising, no matter what. I'll always be fundraising. It's part of my DNA. You know, I just fundraise. But the future is what Robert's going to talk to you about. And the reason I chose Robert is because I see a brilliant future with him, a new horizon. I see him doing what Robert does so well, which is tell you what he's going to do. So we're going to let you tell him what the future is. I know that it's in good hands.
Wonderful.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kimberly Dowdell, and I'm a Cornell architect class of 2006. I also have sort of a fine arts related question. sort of piggybacking off of Lisa's question, I'm interested in, I guess as an architect, I'm interested in different types of cross-pollination, if you will. And so I'm interested if you have any stories about, or examples really, of cross-pollination with art and, I'm sorry, with dance and other fine arts, or just other different disciplines, and how you've sort of merged the two over the years.
Yes, I remember one ballet I did a long time ago. Remember the one with the screens? Oh my God, double exposure. Boy, was that a headache. But it was a wonderful adventure because I stepped out into territory I'd never been in before, and that's the whole idea. But I worked with screens. So a camera, a dancer had a camera in his hand while he was dancing, poor thing. That was Matthew too. And we had huge double screens on the stage. And it was the first time I ever started, and that was new back then. It was the first time I used multimedia. So that was one of my adventures that way. And I also put my paintings on stage. I'm not a great, I'm a great artist. I can draw because nobody can draw like me. Hey. We have to look at it that way, you know? I mean, I'm the one that put those strokes on the paper, so I think it's wonderful. But my company was gracious enough, the Ailey organization, they've been putting up with me for a long time, but they we actually produced these drawings that I made on stage for one of the last ballets that I did. It was quite something to see them 30 feet, you know, high and wide, and I enjoyed that. But yeah, can we think of anything else that we've done that where we use multi, where we've gone into? Say again. Oh, the stack up. The scenery and stack up was done by Romar Bearden. It's a ballet that we did called The Stack Up. It was choreographed by Tally Beatty. And the set, he did two ballets for us. The set and it was a scrim that was hanging from the back. And it was strips of black, and it was lit, and people would poke their arms through it. And you'd have to see the ballet. I can't describe it really well. But yeah, Romar was a friend of Mr. Ailey's.
We have time for one more question right here, please. And hang on just until the microphone gets to you.
Thanks, Ellie.
And don't be under any pressure that this is the last question before this big deal is going to happen.
I'll try to keep it short. Ms. Jameson, my name is Richard Silver. I'm a Cornellian class of 50 in the medical school of 53. And like you, age has not kept me from practicing, and President Scorton is still my boss. I would join the Ailey School in enthusiasm, except for the fact that I had a hip replacement, not limited because of my age, but my orthopedist said I'd be nuts to do it, so I can't. But I would like to address President Scorton in the last question. Dr. Scorton, the Gates Foundation really recently published a lengthy memo that I think was published either in the New York Times recently or the Wall Street Journal, saying one of the problems with higher education is that we're not directing our graduates into technological issues that can be of fundamental value to society, such as computer science, engineering, human resources, medicine, et cetera. How do you reconcile, as a president of the university with a limited budget and now limited funding from, let's say, the National Council of the Arts, et cetera, this tremendous inspirational kind of talk that Ms. Jameson has given us with the practical realities of education and students trying to make a living as they enter adulthood and support a family and the world in general?
First of all, I want to tell that we're going to have one more question because the lady behind you was going to ask a question earlier, and I wanted to give her a chance because I was actually pointing at her, not at a doc, but that's okay. It's good to see you as always. You know, that's one of the things that keeps me up at night because I don't have a flip answer for this one. It's hard to reconcile those things, but together, people like you and I have to find a way to do it because if we surrender, I'm going to use that verb, to the idea that the only things that are of value are things that are instrumental and utilitarian in that sense, then I think we're all going to just become technicians of various kinds, even physicians like you and me. I'm sure you recall when we both took the Hippocratic Oath a few years apart, but we both took it, how many of the elements of that oath had nothing to do with science and with the scientific method, that had to do with the interactions between people, integrity and ethics. So I think we have to find a way to do it. And I will say one good thing about the Gates Foundation. They do fund things in all kinds of different areas, including some that are not totally high tech. Maybe you and I can talk a little bit about that afterwards. It's a great question. One of the many things that keeps me up at night. One last question, please.
Hey, Marnie Geltman, 87 BFA. I'm an Ailey groupie. I absolutely love this company. And I remembered seeing Caught, which also I think was using photography with dance. And I think you inspire so many of the dancers to bring so much of themselves to the dance. So it's not only the technical aspects of it, but it's a piece of themselves to the dance, which makes it so much more interesting than so many other dance companies. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we have a lot more excitement to come. First, I want to take just a moment, if I can, to thank you for the conversation. And we have a more tangible way to thank you, if my colleagues will help me do it. Please. Yes, now's the time. Thank you.
Oh, pretty, pretty, pretty.
Thank you so much.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Great, great.
From us to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, pretty. Thank you. What a beautiful. And it's number, too. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can you
hold it for a second while I push
myself
up? Okay, I will. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce you to the artistic director designate, undesignate in 2.5 weeks, because by July 1st, Robert Battle will be the artistic director of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Robert Battle.
Thank you. See, this is metaphorically how it's going to happen. Do you see that? Anyway, hello. I don't know, am I going to be asked questions or am I just going to talk? I could do either. One of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about movement, I think what we're all after with all of this talk of dance and artistry and performance, the performing arts. Growing up in Liberty City, Miami, there wasn't much for money, but I never noticed because we were surrounded by music and song and poetry. My mother, who was actually my cousin, who would wake me up every morning by opening the blinds and saying, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of all recorded times and all our yesterdays have lighted way for fools to a dusty death. Shakespeare, anybody? I haven't lost my mind yet. You know, the notion that we had, we were rich in spirit because of the arts. I didn't think of it as the arts. I thought of it, it was just expression. Only as I grew older, I realized that it was what they called the performing arts. But one of those pivotal moments for me was when I saw Revelations for the first time as a young 12-year-old person. And we were bused there. I was one of those 4,000 bused there in Miami Beach at the Jackie Gleason Performing Arts Center to see a performance. And there is something magical. You can see things on television and all of that, but there's something about live theater, being in a dark theater, right? And then all of a sudden, everything is lit up. You know, you see what we call possibility. And seeing Revelations is the reason that I made it from Liberty City, through Juilliard, through coming to study at the school in the summers, the Ailey School, all the way to the position that I'm in now. I think it really is about communication. That's what we're all after. So whatever language you happen to use, we happen to use movement. It really is about making a connection and reminding people of their common humanity, that I am a human being. I always say this quote, and nothing human can be alien to me. So that's really what it's all about. And so you talk about the future of the company. Pretend that's not happening behind the way. There's a curtain there, imaginary curtain. But it really is, I think of the first, one of the first things I learned when I started dancing was this gesture. It may mean something to you. Like Ms. Jamison says, there won't be a quiz, but I remember this, and I think it says it all. You start here, you lift your arms to your heart, and you open up. That says it all. And what I plan to do in the future is keep that going. That it started here and open out to all of you, and that's why people keep coming back again and again. There is something about opening one's heart, and there's something about sharing that that is powerful. It's not about money, although money is nice. But that moment that you have that experience, that connection, it reminds you of your humanity. And so that's what I'm going to continue to do by extending out, meaning reaching out to choreographers who may have never had that opportunity as young choreographers coming up to work with these marvelous dancers and this company, but also choreographers who've been making work for a long time and have yet to contribute. I'm going to always be looking for new ways to challenge you and excite you about not only these dancers, about possibility. So that kind of says it in a nutshell. It's going to be a fun ride, and it's already been amazing. I just hired, we have 30 dancers, and I hired 9 new dancers. I replaced 9 dancers. And as you know, like you said, the career is sometimes short. Dancers have to move on. Some become choreographers. Some become artistic directors of major, oh, that's me. anyway, but that's been exciting, because I remember myself being a young person. And I mean, to work with the Ailey Company in any capacity is, as you can imagine, a dream for a young dancer. And so for me, one of the highlights was being in that audition and then telling those dancers who got in that they did indeed get in. And I mean, you can't imagine the emotion. I mean, people just buckled and cried. You would have thought they won the lottery, right? Except they would have spent it all by now. That was a few weeks ago. But anyway, that was thrilling. And now to watch them in rehearsals, some of them preparing to go overseas maybe for the first time, some not, but just the idea that we're offering that opportunity to some young person. That to me is what it's all about. And I think the spirit of Mr. Ailey, and certainly the legacy now of Ms. Jamison, is that you want to see people do their best. You want to provide a space for them to do their best. So there's something both selfish about that and selfless. And so I'm looking forward to sitting back and standing in the wings or whatever on this tour and watching these 9 dancers express themselves in all kinds of ways. And it so happens that I happen to take over July 1st and we'll be in Russia. Ain't that something? A takeover in Russia. How divine. Anyway. So instead of just talking at you, since we're not just in the business of talking, I thought it would be a great thing for you to see some dance. Are you into that? Yes. Oh, I knew that. And this dance is particularly meaningful for me because it was one of the dances that sort of, as we say, put me on the map. I don't know what map, but it kind of made a lot of things possible. It's a 3-minute and 20-second dance. Right, Yannick? Yannick's in the back. He's getting ready. Gonna rock your socks. I made it actually in a living room in Queens. Anybody been to Queens? Anybody been? You haven't been in the same living room because you couldn't fit. But you know, I made the dance because I was excited and still am excited about movement. And I like bringing this dance into my first season because it reminds me of that innocence that we have to maintain as creative people in order to do what we do. In some ways, ignorance is bliss. That you just go and say, I'm gonna do it anyway. Part of my speech I gave last night, anyway. So, the music is Sheila Chandra. The dance is called Takademi, although some have called it Takademi. Some have called it Takademi, but I'm here to tell you today it's Takademi. Can everybody say that? Takademi, oh, you're all hired for something. It's the music of Sheila Chandra, as I've said. It's the way that you learn the tabla in that culture is that you have to learn to speak it first, the sounds. So if you want to think of it as, in a way, vocal scatting, think of Ella Fitzgerald, think of Takadimi. It has that ring to it. And really, for me, it's a lot of my influences. One of them was Michael Jackson. You know who he was, right? Now, funny enough, I have to tell this story. One of the dancers I hired, his name is Michael Jackson Jr. Okay, so anyway, no, I said to, when he was doing the audition, I said to one of the dancers, I was watching, I was like, isn't this guy great? Isn't Michael Jackson great? She said, yeah, Michael Jackson is great, but what does that have to do with what we're doing? Anyway, I just hired him. And a lot of it has to really do with the response to the syllables. And although it sounds like nonsense, but just like movement, although I don't gesture this way to say hello and dance, I may go like this, but the feeling is the same, right? You understand that? So when I heard the sounds, I could actually hear phrases. And so as you watch, you will start to make sense of the nonsense. And isn't that what art is all about? Anyway, without further ado, Yannick Lebrun in Takadimi.
Thank you. You know, believe it or not, he and I are the same species, actually. But he's doing a lot more with it. So I want to thank everybody for being a part of this tonight. I want to thank Judith Jamison. Let us see your face just for a moment, please. It's so wonderful to have you here. And you thank you, Robert, for all the magic to come and all the things that we're going to enjoy with you over the years and decades. And I hope you will join us for a reception right outside here. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Thanks for the great questions. And we'll see you in a minute and see you around for a long time. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy.